You're listening to Next Stop CPA, the official podcast for the CPA exam, brought to you by the AICPA.
Welcome back to another episode of Next Stop CPA. I want to welcome everyone again. Today we have a really great topic. We're talking about one of the sections on the Uniform CPA Examination, AUD or Auditing and Attestation. We have two very knowledgeable guests with us, specific people to the AUD section. We have my friend Jim Bukowski and my other friend Kevin Gouldy with us. They work regularly on developing questions, maintaining the content on that. So I thought it would be great to have them on, do a little bit about the AUD and kind of familiarize our listeners out there about what the AUD exam section entails. So thanks for joining me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us, Mike. Thanks.
Yep, happy to be here.
I always like to start off our episodes just finding out why CPA, because that a lot of people don't always come to it directly. Did you always know, Jen, that you wanted to be a CPA?
No, I didn't, in fact. I sort of fell into accounting during college. I really knew nothing about it. There's no one in my family who's a CPA, and I didn't really know any CPAs. I started out as a liberal arts major and took a business class for a minor requirement and kind of said, oh, this is interesting and kind of cool, and it kind of steered me in that direction, and I transferred to the business school, and the rest is history.
And you ended up in public accounting?
I did. After I graduated college, I worked in public accounting, started out as an intern, and left 10 years later as a senior manager.
And now here you are as a test developer, making sure that the next generation is ready. Kevin, what about you? Now, I guess you wanted to be an accountant right off the bat.
Not me either. I started off in college as a chemistry major, thinking that I wanted to be a pharmacist. Mm. And after going to chemistry classes for a year, I knew that was absolutely not for me. So I, in my sophomore year, took a accounting class as a gen ed requirement, and had a pretty influential professor who told me on my way home from college, or he's talking to the whole class, but he said, on your way home, look at every business that you drive by on your way home and just think about the fact that every single one of those businesses needs the services of an accountant at some point. And since one of the primary drivers for me was job security, that, you know, really hit me hard. So that really steered me towards
accounting.
Yeah,
stability is everything when you get out of college and look for a position.
Right. And after leaving college, I was at public accounting for 8 years, and then I came to the AICPA to work on the exam. So
now you get the quote-unquote torture of the next generation.
That's right.
Or, you know, and I think that's a misconception. It's not about what we're trying to do to stress you out or confuse you. Or I think it's pretty straightforward. I mean, we have the blueprints, and we're going to be going through specifically the AUD section today. And it's really about, here's all the content. This is everything that's eligible for testing. Study, prepare, do what you have to do, utilize all the tools. But so I'm hopeful that what we discussed today is going to be one of those little tools for our folks out there. So I want to get right into the AUD section, because it encompasses, I guess, four main content areas. You have ethics, professional responsibilities, and general principles. You have assessing risk and developing a planned response, performing further procedures, obtaining evidence, and then forming conclusions and reporting. I guess if you had to sum up the overall AUD, is there a way to sum up AUD, what it means? I mean, to me, it sounds self-explanatory. It's auditing. And if you're right, public accounting, right?
Yeah. And I think the whole exam itself is geared toward a two-year, a person with 2 years of experience. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, this is a basis for initial licensure. So, you know, we mainly focus on entry level topics, I guess. Area one really talks more about general topics, nature and scope of engagements, ethics, independence, professional conduct, terms of engagement documentation, really a lot of things that apply universally to all types of auditing and attestation engagements.
Yeah, so somebody in their first couple of years would be quite familiar with this kind of work.
Yeah.
The general understanding.
Exactly. It's a lot of the general background and understanding you need really on any engagement that you work on.
Got it, engagement letter,
documentation requirements, communication requirements, of course, code of conduct, professional conduct that bounds all CPAs. So
got it.
A lot of those things.
And the types of questions in this content area, we're talking, you know, the things that are in the remembering and understanding, the application type level, because it is really the basic questions, Kevin. Mm-hmm.
Yes. So everything in area one is tested at remember and understand and application. And what that means for how that might manifest on the exam is that you can probably expect to see questions from area one, mostly in multiple choice. Mm-hmm. Multiple choice questions can be at that remember and understanding level and application. TBSs can be at application analysis or evaluation. So area one does not have any analysis or evaluation task statements in it. So there could still be some of these task statements that manifest as TBSs, task-based simulations, mm-hmm. that at the application level. But as you're, you know, if you're working through the blueprint and you're reading it and you're trying to get a feeling for what you're going to see based on reading through area one, everything being at remember and understand and application, you're probably going to see most of that in the multiple choice questions.
So. Got it. And I guess it is important to note that AUD is the only section that rises to the evaluation level as far as skill levels. All the other three only focus remember and understand through analysis, correct?
Correct. Yep.
So if we're looking at assessing risk and developing a planned response, obviously another part of the role, working in auditing, what kind of tasks are, what's something that they should know about that particular area?
Yeah, area two really focuses on the engagement process, from the initial planning of engagement through risk assessment, and then designing procedures to respond to the assessed risk. So this is where engagement planning comes into play, understanding an entity and its environment, understanding internal control, including internal control over financial reporting, and then assessing risks at the client and planning your audit and planning your audit procedures based on those risks. Yeah. So a lot of material is covered in area two.
Got it. And performing further procedures, obtaining evidence, I assume that's kind of along the same lines. It's more of is it more in the background or getting ready to for the engagement? Or
so I would say with performing procedures and obtaining evidence, this is where you'll probably see kind of the boots on the ground auditing skill type of questions. And if you're looking at the blueprint, a lot of these task statements are at the analysis and evaluation level, which means that you're going to be seeing these in the simulations.
Got it.
Because these are at the evaluation level and they're testing these higher order skills, they're really focused on kind of critical thinking and executing on those skills that you're really using in the field when you're conducting an audit. So
you're going to be playing with exhibits and in order to finish any type of item that you're going to get.
Exactly. A lot of the analysis and evaluation tests tend to have exhibits to look at, you know, where you're going to be looking at documents and drawing conclusions for how you're going to respond in your audit based on the documents that you have in front of you.
So we're talking like statements, inventory sheets, emails, memos, things yep. like that, anything
emails,
imaginable,
memos,
I guess.
Reconciliations, confirmations, different yep. pieces of audit evidence that you will receive from a client could be an exhibit.
Oh, great. And then I think the natural conclusion is forming conclusions and reporting. I guess that's covering the kind of the end game of an audit engagement, correct?
Correct. Yeah, that's covered in area four. And that's really identifying the factors that an auditor, an accountant, or other practitioner should consider when forming their conclusion on the engagement. So when reporting on the engagement, a lot of this is mostly remembering, understanding, and some application in area four as well. There isn't the traditional memorize the audit report like it used to be, you know, many, many years ago. While you should definitely know what's included in an audit report and all of the things that go into it, you know, I don't think memorizing an audit report is really gonna help, and you're obviously not going to be required to write out an audit report word for word from memory. So, you know, that's that's probably a misconception about Area 4.
Got it. So to get through the odd section in its entirety, you're looking at about, you're looking at 72 multiple choice questions and 8 simulations. And obviously they're broken up into 5 testlets. And if you go check out our website, aicpa.org/CPA exam, you can see the testlet structure if you're not already familiar. So 8 sims, you're going to be looking at these exhibits, working through the problems and getting yourself through that odd section. Now, obviously, if odd's not your strong subject, your forte, that could be freaking you out, make you nervous. Oh, I got to take odd. You might be better at tax, I guess, and hence the reg section. But was there a section that you personally, Kevin, when you were getting ready to take the exam, that you were like, oh my God, I can't do this?
Yeah, and for me, it was odd.
It was, and the irony of working on odd.
Yeah, definitely. I had to take odd 4 times before I passed it.
Wow, okay.
So this was definitely, and that was the most times I had to take any other section. I think the other sections I passed at least on my second try. So odd was definitely the hardest section for me. I think part, you know, I definitely owe my passing to having taken a review course. I also owe it to the amount of pressure that I was under to pass it. If I hadn't passed it on this last shot, I would have lost my FAR credit because it would have rolled off after the 18-month window. And not only that, but my wife was pregnant, and if I didn't pass it on this last chance, my son would have been born by the time I would have a chance to take it again. So it was kind of a do or die moment for me.
You know how family impacts.
Definitely. But in addition to the review course and the life pressures I was under, I think the other thing that helped was just the longer, you know, it took me to pass it, the longer I was working, I was in the field, I was actually auditing.
Oh, and learning and experiencing what you were going to be tested on.
Absolutely. So I think, you know, just the longer I was kind of in the field and actually working on auditing, it kind of made these concepts click and helped me when I got to the exam, especially with the simulations, be able to work through those. So.
Cool. Jed, now, did odd bother you, or you like, I can do this?
No, yeah. I mean, my situation was a little bit different. I took the exam in the paper and pencil days.
Uh-oh.
So, yes, I thought I would be a warrior, and I took the very last offering of the paper and pencil CPA exam in November of 2003. And at that time, you had to take all 4 parts at once.
You couldn't
take them section by section. So I thought, hey, that sounds crazy, but let me do that so I don't have to deal with the computerized exam. And I took all 4 parts at once, and I passed audit and FAR, or FAIR as it was called at the time, on the first try. So then I had to retake what is now the equivalent of Reg and BEC in the computerized format. The parts changed, and it was a little bit crazy in 2004 when the exam went computerized. So I took the first testing window of the computerized exam in the summer of 2004. Mm-hmm. And then I passed Reg and BEC. And I think those, I was really kind of scared about both of those, mostly because I didn't work in tax, so I didn't really know much about tax. And secondly, BEC was a brand new section and really had no precedent for what was in it. And it was kind of I just kind of jumped in. And at the time, you know, it all worked out. But so my exam experience is a little bit different and differs from how things are now, where you can take them kind of section by section and one section at a time.
Cool. I don't know. I mean,
looking back, it was a little bit crazy to try to.
Yeah, I think I'd want the computer.
Should have just waited. But you know,
but you got through it.
Yeah, I got through it, and it's scary. I think no matter what it is. So I thought, well, let me give this a try. People have been doing this for a long time. It can't be that bad. It was pretty bad.
This is almost like one of those days where you're like, in my day.
Yeah, I know. And I'm feeling very
old,
but I had
to study all 4 at once.
It seemed like pretty revolutionary at the time. But, you know, now I'm used to the 4 parts and having to having to take all four parts at once was definitely crazy, and I don't know why I ever did that, but much better how we have it now.
Well, for those studying and getting ready to take the odd exam section this year in 2019, as they all know, we put out the exam blueprints. There's a section for each section, and we put out these blueprints 1 to 2 times a year if there are updates that need to be done, things like that. Was there anything in 2019 that was different in the blueprints, anything coming up? Because we did have 2 blueprints for 2019. One took effect at the top of the year here in January, and the other takes effect in July, which is typical for us every 6 months or so lead time. Was there anything in 2019 worth mentioning for anybody that may be testing this year?
Yeah, I mean, audit didn't have any real fundamental changes. We did issue some blueprint updates in January of 2019 that really just clarified the testing eligibility of audit data analytics in the current blueprint. So it's really has been eligible for testing all along, but we realized that our blueprint did not speak directly to audit data analytics, even mm-hmm. though analytical procedures has always been part of the blueprint. So we issued some additional task statements clarifying the fact that audit data analytics is a concept that's in the blueprint, and we added some new task statements to make that more apparent and transparent to candidates.
Good. So no new items or anything?
No,
like that.
They're, yeah, and really all we require candidates to do is, you know, maybe interpret some charts or graphs that are part of the TBS. There's no new existing item type, no new item formats. The response formats all remain the same. So it'll just be, you know, maybe there's a bar chart or a pie chart or something as an exhibit, and you may have to answer some questions about that. But, you know, there really isn't anything fundamentally different about questions.
Got it. And you talked about clarification, and essentially that's what it was. It's all about making things not confusing for people. Now, if you had to think of something in the odd section that you hear anecdotally, oh, you know, I just don't get it, I don't understand it. Is there a confusing topic or subject that might fall into the odd section that typically people are not familiar enough with? Or
I'm always surprised at how the lack of understanding I think people have around audit assertions, mm-hmm. the kind of standard existence, completeness, cutoff, they're kind of basic elements, building blocks really for an audit. And I think it's a understanding that people get with time in the profession. So I think when people are trying to take the exam coming right out of school, that's probably something that they're less comfortable with than someone that does have 2 years of experience.
Right.
So I think, you know, the way that those concepts are tested on the exam is absolutely appropriate, but, you know, I think a lot of people do try and jump right into the exam after college. So that's one area that I think people probably stumble on a little bit more so than I would always expect them to. So.
Got it. Now, for those preparing to sit for this section, or any section for that matter, any advice, like how did you get through it? Obviously, Jen, you were studying for a little bit more,
right?
Rather than just this one odd section. But any advice on what they should do?
I think really draw on your personal experience, read all of the information given, read the instructions to the question. I can guarantee we are not trying to trick anybody. We go through an enormous, enormous review process to ensure that the questions are fair and clear, and we do our best not to have any tricks on the exam, and that's definitely not what we're looking for. So really read the instructions, use the information that's given, access the sample test on our website to get
that's
it.
That's an important one, yes.
Definitely, to get a feel for the user interface, you know, some simple things like just knowing, you know, how to answer a question, how the option list works, how the authoritative literature works, where the submit test lip button is, how to advance to the next question, how to go back to a question you may want to go back to. Some of that really basic blocking and tackling really makes a difference when you're under pressure in an exam environment, and accessing the sample test that's on our website ahead of time will, you know, let you practice doing that, and you'll feel a lot better when you see something familiar pop up on the screen. You'll know how to enter your
ESID.
Right.
Exactly. We did experience that. Now, obviously, it's a different topic. This is more on getting ready, but we've heard anecdotally people timing out.
Exactly.
And not entering their thing.
Yeah.
What is it, 5 minutes?
You have 5 minutes, but if you really don't know what we're asking for and where the number is on your paper, it could be, you could stumble and you can't launch the exam without that number.
And it's like, thank you, there's your session.
Yes, exactly. And now you've paid time. For a session that...
Please avoid that at all costs.
Exactly. So I think just practicing on the sample tests and understanding the different response formats, how the clock works, the breaks work, is really, really helpful. And we'll help calm you down during the exam and let you really focus on the content and not the how do I go back or how do I enter my response? I don't understand how the rounding works or authoritative literature.
My co-host Lauren and I have to do an episode on the test structure. I think that's a good one. It won't be that long, but it would be helpful, I think, to just take people through the steps.
Yeah.
Kevin, what were your study habits, or what do you think a candidate today should do to get themselves through on or any section?
I actually think the most important thing for studying for the exam is having a support network, and setting expectations for your friends and family as far as the time commitment that this test is going to require. It really is an 18-month journey.
Don't have a baby during the
That's really a good idea. When you hit a rough patch in it, reaching out to coworkers who have been through it, mentors that you have that have been through it. Personally, I reached out to my college professor when I kind of failed for that third time, and I had that one last chance. I reached out to my college professor, laid it out for her, and she helped me, set me up with a review course. And I know that I wouldn't have been able to pass it without her, but having that wide support network and leaning on others as you work your way through it, I think is one of the most important things for successfully completing all four sections. So.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, I thank you guys for joining me today. This was great. I hope all our podcast listeners out there found it helpful, a little bit of information to help them along in their CPA exam journey. But stay tuned for our next episode. We want to thank you all for joining us.
Great. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks for listening to Next Stop CPA. Got an idea for an upcoming episode topic, or just want to let us know what you think of the podcast? Share your thoughts with us at nextstopcpa@aicpa-cima.com. And don't forget to visit aicpa.org/CPA exam for the latest exam info.
This podcast is designed to provide illustrative information with respect to the subject matter covered, and does not represent an official opinion or position of the AICPA or AICPA.org. It is provided with the understanding that the AICPA and AICPA.org are not engaged in offering legal, accounting, or other professional service. If such advice or expert assistance is required, the services of a competent professional person should be sought. The AICPA and AICPA.org make no representations, warranties, or guarantees as to, and assume no responsibility for, the content or application of the material contained herein, and especially disclaim all liability for any damages arising out of the use of, reference to, or reliance on such material.